You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
You can't call the Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson a breakout star because he's already won a Super Bowl, could have won another one. He's a seven-time Pro Bowler and one of the faces of the league. But you get the feeling that America is now wrapping their heads around how special he is. He's thrown 14 touchdowns in his first three games. That's a new NFL record, breaking the one set by Patrick Mahomes back in 2018. And the Seahawks need every one of them because they could have lost to New England. They could have lost to Dallas yesterday. On Sunday, they blew a big lead and they held on for a seven-point win. But this year's narrative is the complete opposite of their Super Bowl year. You know, they won with defense. They had Richard Sherman in the Legion of Boom. And now you tune in to watch Seattle because chances are you're going to see a shootout. And that's what we saw yesterday. And the Seahawks are 3-0. Although I don't know how people would be reacting if he had 14 touchdown passes and they were 1-2. If they had lost to Dallas, if they had lost to New England. Because the real issue there is that defense or lack thereof. Dallas has a good offense, could have won that game, but give credit to Seattle as they improve to 3-0. You got the game tonight. It'll be the Ravens and the Chiefs. How spicy is that? You got the NBA Finals that are set. Baseball's playoffs are set. They start on Tuesday. You had interesting college football over the weekend because I'm not sure who's good, who's great, and who's overrated and underrated. Oklahoma loses at home. LSU loses at home. All right, you got my attention there. Get ready. You don't need a seatbelt. You need a Hans device here because this is going to be a wild ride here. Who had the Miami Heat in the NBA Finals? That's what I thought. Nobody did. Now, this is what I'm expecting. Well, LeBron, he's going to beat the Miami Heat, and come on, he didn't have to face the Bucks. He didn't have to face the Clippers. And I always like to give you sort of that preemptive strike of, how are they going to turn this, twist this on LeBron James? If he just, you know, he happens to win this, then, well, he didn't have to go through any good teams here. He didn't have to play in Miami. Anthony Davis carried them. I will say, though, here I am the day before that last game, and I was wondering how LeBron was sort of maybe picking his minutes, maybe pacing himself, and then he comes out and just demolishes Denver in that last game. Yeah, maybe he's not, you know, kind of picking his spots there. He played 40 minutes and dominated.
Yeah,
Seton.
Yeah, he was picking his spots for that moment.
He was resting up for that game.
Yeah.
The game clincher is what he was resting up for. But the Lakers advance, and now they face the Miami Heat. Baseball's playoffs begin on Tuesday. I don't know if you know who's in, who's not, where they're playing, how long the series are, but we'll give you a little, I guess we'll try to lay it out there for you so you're like Cliff Notes version of the baseball playoffs that'll be coming up. Yes, Paul?
I was driving in this morning and they said, well, it's a best of three. I'm like, wait a second.
Yeah.
I thought that was just a joke.
Yeah.
Best of three, first round?
Yeah.
I think people are going to be real shocked when their team is down 1-0 and you're like, well, here's the game. This is it.
Season's on the line. By the way, this program brought to you by Traeger. Traeger wood-fired pellet grills offering Wi-Fi connectivity. You can deal with your grill. You don't have to be standing by the grill. And you get that convenience, the real wood-fired flavor. TraegerGrills.com/DP Show. Who's handling the poll question since McLovin is not here today?
I am presenting them. Seton is updating them. We have a tag team thing going on here.
All right. Front row, stepping
up.
Those
are big shoes to fill. I mean, you need more than one person.
Literally, he's like 11 and a half.
Yeah, he's, okay. I have very small feet.
Do you want positivity or negativity?
Anytivity. I'm activity.
Which team is most done? The Texans, the Eagles, the Vikings, or the Falcons? They have zero chance to make the playoffs in your mind.
Okay, wait a minute.
Paul came up with that one, by the way.
Texans, Eagles, Vikings, Falcons.
Most done.
The Texans they played as tough a schedule as anybody. So,
and it shows.
Yeah, but they're not done, especially in that division. Eagles, I don't think the Vikings are done. I would say the Falcons are done because they're in the division with the Saints and Buccaneers. Their coach is in a whole lot of trouble there because you can't blow that many leads in the way they've done it, there's no lead that's safe for the Atlanta Falcons. I think we can comfortably say that.
It's like a punchline now.
Yeah. Like, you're up how many? How long will it take for your opponent to be able to come back and win this? And this is back-to-back weeks. You're blowing double-digit leads in the fourth quarter. And you got your wish. You got Mitchell Trubisky. And then all of a sudden they bring in Nick Foles, and Nick Foles leads them to victory. But, oh, it was uncomfortable yesterday in that post-game press conference. Here's Dan Quinn, the Falcons head coach, on whether or not he had spoken to the owner, Arthur Blank.
Have you spoken with Arthur following the game, Dan? And how concerned are you about your job status following these 2 weeks?
We visit every week, pregame, postgame, Mondays through the week. Any time, Zach, honestly, that I take away from that is time that all I can do is being in front of the team. And I said, I need to be the same guy on our best days and our worst days and stand tall for them and bring the energy and the coaching and the focus that we need to go win. Anything past that does not help the team.
Oh, boy. I don't know if that made sense to anybody other than, no, I don't think I've talked to the owner because the game just ended 15 minutes ago, but I'm sure I will hear from that owner. But you're blowing double-digit leads late in the fourth quarter there, back-to-back weeks. And you know what? The Falcons are a good team. I mean, they had the ability. They might be the best three-quarter team in football right now. If they didn't play that fourth quarter, Falcons would be great this year. That damn fourth quarter comes around, and oh. And here are the Chicago Bears, who are only good in the fourth quarter, and they're undefeated. Go figure there. Packers over the Saints last night. Aaron Rodgers, I guess everything's okay in Green Bay, right? He doesn't need another wide receiver. They didn't need to use that first-round pick on a wide receiver. They did that without Devontae Adams in there. And is Drew Brees' arm, is it still tired? Because I'm not sure. He looked okay last night. But now people are saying he's sort of like Tony Gwynn. He hits a lot of singles. Like, he's not hitting doubles, triples, or home runs. He's hitting singles. And he found Alvin Kamara. They didn't have Michael Thomas. But I was surprised that the Packers had their way. And Aaron Rodgers seems to have bought into whatever system it is that Matt LaFleur has. And Aaron Rodgers looks pretty good. Looks pretty good right now. Titans won again. The Seahawks, the Chiefs tonight against the Ravens. The Bills barely hold on against the Rams. The Steelers won again. They're undefeated. So there's a lot going on in the NFL. And what you're seeing is a whole lot of great passing. And if it seems like the quarterback position in the NFL has never been better and deeper, it's probably because it hasn't. The NFL league-wide passer ratings through 3 weeks over the last 5 years, it was 88% in 2016, 90% the following year, 2018, 93, 2019, 94% rating, and now it's 96%. And also, if you look at the leaders in the passing categories, you got a different leader in each one. Phillip Rivers leads in completion percentage. Dak Prescott leads in passing yards. Russell Wilson Jr. III leads in touchdown passes and passer rating. And Lamar Jackson leads in yards per attempt. That's a deep, deep quarterback field so far. What are some of the other poll questions we're looking at, Paul?
All right. Which team do you think is going to the playoffs? The Bears at 3-0, the Cowboys at 1-2, the Saints at 1-2. Which of those three teams, you got to pick one that would make the playoffs? That's a toughie.
Yeah, because I have the Cowboys going to the Super Bowl. And I figure that the Saints are going to be there. Well, I'll say Dallas just because they have to go to the playoffs. Because I have them going to the Super Bowl. But, you know, Michael Thomas comes back. I mean, that's still a very good team. The one thing that I felt is they have a great home field advantage. New Orleans is that's a tough place to win in. And you're watching last night, Aaron Rodgers doesn't need a silent count. And Chris Collinsworth pointed this out. Normally, you go to New Orleans in that building, you need a silent count. He didn't need to. And Aaron Rodgers looks really relaxed there. And I've said this before, and I know some people that caught people off guard when I said it, but when he is playing at, you know, an elite level, nobody has made the game look easier than Aaron Rodgers. Nobody. Now, Russell Wilson it looks like he's really working when he's playing great. Aaron Rodgers, at times, it feels like he's just, you know, a couple of steps ahead of everybody. When he's playing great, I don't think I've seen anybody in the history of the game to make it look as easy as he does. And that's including Montana, you know, Brady, go down the list of all-time great quarterbacks. There's something about Rodgers' ability where he knows what you're doing and you can't do anything about it. And you saw that last night. You saw that the previous week. Let's just see if it's going to be consistent enough to win that division. And last year, 13-3, I thought that was kind of a aberration. It didn't feel like they were 13-3. It was a little bit of a mirage. And I thought they were maybe a 10-6 team. Maybe they are a 13-3 team. I don't know. But so far, looks pretty good there in Green Bay. All right, 877-3DP-SHOW, email address dp@danpatrick.com, Twitter handle @DPShow. Reggie Miller a little bit later on. He'll preview the NBA Finals. By the way, here is Jimmy Butler on his experience being with the Miami Heat first year.
A lot of ups and a lot of downs, obviously, with everything that's happened in 2020. From a basketball standpoint, couldn't be better. You're talking about where we are right now going to the finals. This is what you want. We talked about it. We put that out there in the world, and I think all of that positive energy that we put out, it came back to us. We believed when not too many didn't, but that's okay. So we're going to keep believing and get these next four.
Get ready to play the underdog role here, because you're going to have that nobody gave us a chance, nobody thought we would be here, and they're right. Nobody did. Bam Adebayo had a great game. I don't know if you've ever had a team make the NBA Finals that didn't have a lottery pick. Andre Iguodala was ninth, but you know he's a role player. He doesn't play much at all. But I'm talking about a starting lineup that doesn't have a lottery pick that's gone to the NBA Finals. Because you got Butler was 30th overall, Crowder 34th overall, Dragic 45th overall, Tyler Hero 13th. Who else do you have? And Bam Adebayo was 14th overall, Kelly Olynyk 13th overall, Kendrick Nunn undrafted. You got a lot of mid first round picks here and no lottery pick here. And I don't know the last time that that happened, but this Miami Heat team is a very balanced team. I'm sure they're huge underdogs here, but they're a very balanced team. The only thing that I wish we could see is that LeBron and the Lakers would be playing games in Miami just to have that come full circle there of they lost him to the Lakers. They're angry they lost him to the Lakers, and now he'd come back to Miami. I'd love to have that atmosphere there, but obviously we're not going to get that.
Can we play game 7 at the Lakers? Ooh. How about just that? Because how much can go wrong at the final game? Let's say we make a deal. If the Heat-Lakers goes to 7, game 7 is played at the Lakers arena. How much can go wrong in 24 hours?
No, I want them playing in Miami.
Really?
Well, yeah.
Okay, 6-7. 6 in Miami, 7 with the Lakers. I think the Lakers would have home court.
Yeah, they would. You got to give Miami at least, they have to have one game at home so they can boo LeBron when he comes back.
Let's do game 6 in Miami, rest day, travel day, game 7 in L.A., and everybody wins.
Let me see if I can pull that off on short notice here.
Got to hurry.
Yeah, I'll try to get a hold of the commissioner. Hey, commissioner, I got an idea for you. How about this? So that'll be the NBA Finals. Reggie Miller will join us. Ross Tucker, our good friend, the former NFL lineman, will join us. And, of course, Russ has the great expression.
Nice.
Nice.
So, Russ will join us coming up. Who's he got tonight? And I love how we hand out this MVP. By the way, we're trying to give it to Russell Wilson, and it's not going to happen because Josh Allen is who you're going to hear about today. And Josh Allen has been pretty incredible. If you take into consideration games from last season and you know spread them over to this season as well, he has been unbelievable. I think 33 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. And that's 14 games. The last 14 games he's played. And that's why Josh Allen was on the short list of people saying maybe he's taken that next step and he can be the MVP. Plus, it's a news story. And you got to win your division. Now, if you look at the track record of MVPs, you got to be usually a number one seed. Cam Newton looked pretty good yesterday. Looked okay. Not great numbers, but once again, they love a good story. I would think the story with Russell Wilson is he's never got an MVP vote before, but he might be peaking too soon. It's like the college guy who peaks in September, and we want to hand him the Heisman. But Josh Allen is getting a lot of love today, and he almost lost that game against the Rams. Very questionable pass interference call. Very questionable. Yes, Paul.
How about your Chargers? Herbert, 300 yards again? You give it up?
How do you lose to Carolina? And then imagine being an Eagles fan today. Like, would you rather be a Falcons fan or an Eagles fan today? And McLovin conveniently is not here, but, you know, like, it feels like the Falcons at least are trying. Like, they at least get a lead. And then Philadelphia yesterday settles for a tie against the Bengals. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. We bring in the former NFL offensive lineman, Ross Tucker, football podcast, Westwood One NFL analyst. He joins us on the program. Where do you want to start? What game, what issue, what concern do you want to focus in on first here, Ross?
Oh, man, Dan, there's a lot of different places we can go, but I do the Eagles preseason telecasts, and I do their pregame on the official pregame radio show, and I just got off being on WIP in Philadelphia, and they're not taking it real well, Dan. They're not real keen on ties in Philadelphia. I mean, look, I can tell you, I grew up there, and I seemingly played for every team other than the Eagles, but growing up there, I can tell you without any hesitation, because all my buddies were texting about it yesterday, they would much rather have tried to win the game and lost, whether it was trying the 64-yard field goal or going for it, then punt it away. They honestly would rather try to win and lose than tie. That's just the mentality. I don't know if that's right or wrong. We'll find out later on in the year, but that's how they feel.
You have the false start on the field goal, and then that takes you out of field goal range. And then on fourth down, you think Eagle fans wanted them to go for it, knowing, you know, if they did try to kick that field goal, the Bengals would at least have a little bit of time and maybe try to win that game.
Yeah, so it's interesting because in the moment, Dan, I guess I kind of felt similarly to Doug Peterson. 19 seconds, fourth and 12 at your own 46-yard line or their 46-yard line. Obviously, they felt like it was too far for a field goal. But I remember thinking, wow, if they go for it and don't get it, Bengals have a great chance at a field goal here. So in the moment, I didn't hate Doug Peterson's decision. But then I started doing the math afterwards. I'm like, okay, wait a minute. They're at the Bengals 46. If they do some type of sprint out with Wentz, he throws the ball down the field, maybe you get pass interference, maybe you catch it. Even worst case scenario, it's incomplete. There's probably only 11 or 12 seconds left, and then the Bengals have to get a nice throw to even get in field goal range. And it's interesting because I was in Philadelphia right after Doug Peterson. I don't know if you guys saw this, but Doug Peterson's already said if he could do it over again, he would do it differently. He would have gone for it. Mm. And kind of working through the math and the situation, I agree with him. I think going for it, trying to get the first down and get out of bounds would have been the right move.
Do you like Joe Burrow's future or Carson Wentz's future?
Right now, I would say Joe Burrow. I mean, you know, you're watching him yesterday. Burrow's a rookie with the worst offensive line in the NFL. Honestly, one of the worst offensive lines we've ever seen. I don't love his near-term future because I doubt he's going to make it through the season. I mean, he got smashed. Eight sacks. Yeah. He got hit 18 times. Malik Jackson almost took his head off. I just don't see how it's unconscionable to me how the Bengals would take Joe Burrow with the number one overall pick and then put him out there behind this offensive line. They are dreadful. But still, Dan, he looks like he knows what he's doing. I mean, he's accurate. He's calm, cool, and collected. I don't know what's happened to Carson Wentz. He's had 3 years in a row where he's thrown seven picks for the whole season. He has six already this year. That's never been an issue for him. He's missing throws he shouldn't. Look, in his 5 years, including even his rookie year probably, this is the worst that Wentz has played. I don't really have an explanation for it. I don't know that anybody does.
Yeah, you start to look at this, and I always wonder, you know, when I see these quarterbacks get selected high and they don't have a good offensive line, I go back to Andrew Luck. You can't have a $100 million investment and then pennies, you know, for an offensive line. And it drove Andrew Luck out of the NFL. I see what's happening with Deshaun Watson in Houston, where he takes a ton of hits there. And that's my big concern with Joe Burrow as they move forward. You got to be able to bulk up that offensive line if you're going to protect your investment, or then why are you taking that quarterback number one overall? Russell Wilson feels like an overnight success after 10 years. What is it about Russell Wilson now that's different than Russell Wilson the last couple of years?
Yeah, well, so I've been consistent with this, Dan. I would say since about 2014, maybe 2015, I've said that if you could give me any quarterback for the next 10 years, it would be Russell Wilson. Isn't he Russell Wilson Jr. the third?
Yes.
He's Russell Wilson Jr. the third now. Yeah. So anyway, it would be Russell Wilson. He is almost perfect in terms of what he does both on and off the field, the way he carries himself. The big difference this year is I think that they know their defense is not very good, and they can't wait for the fourth quarter heroics and try to keep the game close until then. They need to let him go. The strength of the team is Russell Wilson and the receivers. So they're just letting him go, and it's unbelievable. Like on the good news, 14 touchdown passes in his first three games, NFL record. He's obviously the MVP front runner right now. The bad news is, Dan, they're still barely winning these games.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really a shame that Russell Wilson and the offense playing this well never matched up when they had that awesome defense. If you could have combined those two, you'd have one of the best teams ever. Unfortunately, right when they finally figure out they need to let Wilson go and let him do his thing, the defense is not very good.
What concerns do you have for the Cowboys?
Well, there's a bunch. Number one, their defense has not played well at all this year, which is a major problem. And then number two, their offensive line has been decimated by injuries. And that's what ended the game. I mean, I think Dak was going to have a chance to give them a chance to tie that game. But you've got undrafted tackles at both spots. I mean, you can't win that way, Dan. You can't. I give credit to backups that go in there. That was my job a lot. But they've got guys out there that should not be playing. They had to move Zach Martin to right tackle yesterday because the kid they had out there was playing that poorly. It's just not a very good recipe for success. So you combine O-line injuries and O-line issues with a bad defense, not a winning formula for the Cowboys other than the fact they're in the NFC East, so they're in first place.
Talking to Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, and, of course, he does Westwood One NFL analyst. And Thursday night, you have Broncos, Jets. Now, when I look at the Jets here, I don't know how important this game is for Adam Gase. I don't know how secure his job is. I look at Dave Gettleman, the GM of the New York Giants. I don't know how secure his job is. And Dan Quinn, the Falcons head coach. If you're going to handicap how warm the seats are for those gentlemen, where would you start with the hottest?
It's Adam Gase. I mean, there are reports out over the weekend that they need to see something. Then they went out against the Colts and got embarrassed. Now they'll be in a standalone primetime game. It's the only game on. Everybody will be watching. At least some people will be watching. I don't know. It's a tough sell, Dan. Throw out the records when the Broncos and Jets meet on Thursday Night Football.
Why don't we throw out the Broncos and the Jets? Not their
just
records.
Just listen to me and Ian Eagle call the game on the radio. But in all sincerity, it is September 28th, Dan, and I believe we already know that two head coaches are as good as gone. I mean, Adam Gase and Dan Quinn, they're done. It really is a matter of when, not if at this point. There's nothing – I mean, Adam Gase, what a disaster the Jets are. They're the worst team in pro football. And for the Falcons to blow those last two games like they did, he's not coming back from that. So I wouldn't be surprised if the ownership for those two teams already having meetings this week to try to figure out when the right time is to do this, because there's almost no conceivable realistic scenario I can conjure where Dan Quinn or Adam Gase are able to turn this around. And we might even have these guys get let go in the next few weeks. I mean, I would not be shocked if that happens.
But I'm watching the Jets. Sam Darnold did not look good at all, threw a couple of pick sixes. At some point, the Jets are going to have to, if they're bringing in a new coach, and that coach obviously wouldn't have drafted Sam Darnold, if they're in a position to take Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields, like, let's look at this maybe down the road with the Jets. If they're going to be this bad, are they going to be in the market for one of these two top quarterbacks? Have they seen enough of Sam Darnold to, A, give him that extension, or they move on from him?
Well, I definitely don't think they would give him an extension. I mean, I think the Jets are poised to have the number one overall pick in the draft at this point. And so Darnold, it's funny because you said, forget about Gase. Gase is done. Gase is done and dead in the water. Thursday night to me is about Darnold. I mean, the rest of the season is Darnold's chance to prove if the Jets have the number one overall pick that they shouldn't Josh Rosen him, right? They shouldn't get rid of him to get the next guy like the Arizona Cardinals did with Kyler Murray. But at this point, the way Darnold's played, and I know they don't have a lot around him, but even talking with Greg Cosell on the Ross Tucker podcast, he said Darnold's not playing well. I think that there's a very realistic chance that if the Jets have the number one overall pick, they take Trevor Lawrence and Darnold gets the same treatment that Josh Rosen did in Arizona.
Josh Allen's getting some MVP chatter here. How do you assess his game? Because he nearly lost that game with the Rams. He built up a big lead, but then he got sacked a couple times, fumbled, and they had to hold on for dear life. You all in on Josh Allen?
Well, I love him for a couple of different reasons. Number one, the Bills are the team I played the most for, so I have an affinity for him. But number two, Dan, he is probably the most entertaining quarterback in the NFL. Because it's either really good or really bad. I think he had two personal foul penalties yesterday. Has an NFL quarterback ever had two personal foul penalties before? I mean, he is must-see TV. And we joke about him being a roller coaster and the ups and downs. But the reality is this year, there's a lot more ups than there are downs. And that's what you want to see. Year one, year two, year three, with every passing year, there's a lot more ups than there are downs. He's trending in the right direction, and so are the Bills. And in a couple weeks, Dan, October 15th, I'll be there for Westwood One. They host the Chiefs. So Chiefs-Buffalo Bills could be an epic matchup in a couple weeks. I think we'll learn more about the Bills then.
More important game for the Chiefs tonight or the Ravens?
I would say the Ravens because they are the home team. They are favored. And I think the Ravens are going to win probably by double digits, Stan. I don't think you'll have many other people say that. I think the Ravens are nasty. I don't think they're just the best team in football. I think they're the best team in football by a decent amount. You know, they destroyed Baker Mayfield week one. They were smashing Deshaun Watson last week. Their defense is much improved with Calais Campbell. And then their run game, it's funny. I mean, I know I do the Army games on TV for CBS Sports Network. Going against Lamar Jackson and the Ravens running game, it's almost like playing against the service academy. They do so many new and unique things in the running game that these defenses aren't able to prepare for it. The scout team can't give them a good look. They get out there, they've never seen these blocking schemes before. They don't know where these guys are coming from. And oh, by the way, it's J.K. Dobbins and Ingram and Lamar Jackson running the football. I really believe the Ravens run the ball down the Chiefs' throat tonight. I think they get after Patrick Mahomes. I think the Ravens have a great chance to win this game by double digits.
Great to talk to you as always, Ross. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
McLovin is going to call in. He took the day off for Yom Kippur, but he had to call in because he doesn't agree with Ross Tucker. And Paulie took a shot at McLovin via Twitter. Yes, Paulie.
Well, here's the poll question based off where McLovin and Ross are upset. The end of the Eagles game, the Eagles, I think they had a 59-yard field goal try. false start and they could kick it from 64, but then they'll give the ball back to the Bengals. Good chance of losing that game. Poll question. I want my team to, choice one, try a very long field goal to win the game, but risk giving the ball back and losing the game, or punt the ball to guarantee a tie for my team, which is what the Eagles did. What would you want your team to do?
Well, if I'm Doug Peterson, I would be aggressive here. That I mean, you're playing against the Bengals. You're at home against the Bengals. Can you get something? Can you get a pass interference? Can you move it down a little bit further? First of all, I'd say to my offensive lineman, whatever you do, don't jump. Whatever you do, don't flinch, don't jump. And they did it, moved the ball back. McLovin, the blogger for the Dan Patrick Show, calling in. Yes, McLovin.
I don't understand this. How can you try a 64-yard field goal? Hasn't there only been like two field goals ever that long in the history of the sport? And if you miss it, the Bengals are going to win that game.
Okay. So how does a tie help you?
A tie helps you when the Cowboys are 8-8 and the Eagles are 8-7-1. A tie helps you. This is the NFC East we're talking about. A tie is a win. But I didn't understand the math. As I was watching it, I didn't understand the math exactly where the Bengals were going to get the ball. And I read this morning they were going to get at the Eagles' 46-yard line if he missed. That's so far up. And the way Joe Burrow was playing like a veteran, I feel like Philly sports are cursed. The Phillies are out, and we would have lost the Eagles would have lost the game. And by the way, I should not be calling Yom Kippur, but my dad and mom would totally understand. This is some things are more important in the city of Philadelphia.
Paulie took a shot at you on Twitter.
Yeah, I didn't realize it at first. I thought I said I can't defend Carson Wentz, and yeah, he said that everyone else can.
How did you not understand that you're saying you can't defend him? You were going to try to say something nice, and then Paulie goes, everybody else can defend Carson Wentz.
Well, you know what I did, which is even dumber? I looked on Google. I'm like, wait, was Carson Wentz hurt? And I didn't realize it, and everyone else is defending him because he's injured. You know, when you're not in the man cave, you're not ready for the snark 24/7. You kind of get out of that mode, and now I realize.
And then I hear that you're upset with Chris Collinsworth for some reason.
Oh, you mean the pretending not to know that Drew Brees played Andy Roddick in tennis? Is that what we're talking about?
No. The Alvin Kamara best running back.
Oh, no. I agree with him. I'm in the Kamara camp. But then Paulie, this is to get Paulie back. Paulie says that Alvin Kamara is never healthy, and I pulled up the numbers, me and Ethan did, and he's only missed three games his entire career. So Kamara is great. I think that Paul is a little jealous because he doesn't have a good running back in Chicago. And I think Alvin Kamara deserves one, two, or three best running back in the NFL. Right.
Was Kamara the best running back on the field last night?
Probably. But, well, here's the thing. He's such a good receiver. He's like the only – with Michael Thomas out, he's like a receiver or running back. Yeah, I think he was. Aaron Jones is great. But, I think Kamara was the best. I think he's – well, who's better? McCaffrey is the only name that jumps to mind.
I would take Aaron Jones because he doesn't cost me $15 million a year, too.
So you're not going to pay Aaron Jones when it comes time to pay him?
Well, I don't have to. I don't like paying my running backs that second contract. Does Paulie get a chance to respond to defend his honor?
All I have to say is, as a Bears fan, thanks for the quarterback. Appreciate it, McLovin.
Oh, my gosh.
Thanks for the Super Bowl MVP quarterback. Good job letting him go.
You're telling me on a day where the Phillies are eliminated, Nick Foles leads a dramatic comeback, and Carson Wentz has his worst game in years, and the Sixers, who knows what they're doing. This is I need a new city to root for.
Nobody wants to coach the Sixers.
I know. I don't blame them. Should I become a Miami fan? I don't even know what to do anymore. My Milwaukee bandwagon faltered. I'm totally lost over here.
All right, go back to doing whatever you're doing. Aren't you supposed to be fasting and toning for all your bad things, your bad opinions, your bad takes?
I was, but then I get online this morning. Guess who is sending all these insightful emails? Ethan. So I'm not going to let Ethan Yom Kippur me out of a hot take. No way is that happening.
You know, right, Ethan is not observing the High Holy Day. He is working today.
And he's the one who gets the angelic music whenever he comes on. It's not fair. I know. That's why Ethan pushed me.
All right, go back to doing whatever you're doing. Thank you, McLovin. See you tomorrow.
All right, talk to you later.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. College football over the weekend. Oklahoma loses at home. LSU loses at home. And imagine Mike Leach. I've always had a great fondness, curiosity about Mike Leach. He was at Texas Tech. I remember New York Times Magazine. I think they did a cover story on the genius of Mike Leach and the spread offense and what he was doing and how he's changing the game. And he's bounced around to a couple of places. He was at Washington State, kind of harmless there. He'd put out, you know, a decent quarterback or two occasionally, Gardner Minshew. And then, you know, he'd pull off a couple of wins. But he didn't get a lot of coverage at Washington State. So then he goes to the SEC, and all of a sudden you're at Mississippi State. Now, it feels like there's two different tiers in the SEC. Like, you have the haves, and then you have the have-nots. You have Georgia, LSU, Alabama, and then you have the other schools there. And Mississippi State is lumped in there with Ole Miss and Missouri and some of these other schools. You know, occasionally you'll get a Dak Prescott at Mississippi State, but you might pull off a win or two. You know, occasionally you might surprise some people here. Well, you open up your SEC schedule. Your first game is at LSU, and your quarterback is a Stanford transfer, KJ Costello, who had the greatest passing performance an SEC quarterback has ever had. 623 yards, you beat LSU in Leach's debut and your quarterback's debut. And you do that on the road in a place that is not easy to win. Degree of difficulty? That's up there. But he's such a character. I think he had a quote that was something like, yeah, they told us we could play one of the top 10 teams in the NFL, so we decided we would play LSU. And they got the win, and they were the better team. They looked very impressive there. I was watching Texas against Texas Tech, and I'm going, okay, Texas Tech is going to win. I think they were up like 15, and I go, I tuned over to the LSU game. Like, I was trying to find a game that was competitive, and I bounce back, and I go, wait a minute. What did Texas just do? They just won this game. That shocked me there. I was totally surprised with that. Oklahoma losing at home. I think they were up like 21-0. And Bob Stoops, the former Oklahoma head coach, his son catches a touchdown pass. I'm going, all right, you know, Spencer Rattler and Oklahoma, they're going to dominate here and blow out K-State. All of a sudden, I see a score, bottom line. I go, oh, all right, making it interesting here. Oh, really making it interesting. And then I'd flip over and I go, how are they going to lose this game at home? Get ready for this. Now, I did watch Alabama against Missouri, and I actually felt bad for Missouri. That should have been a running clock and maybe just 10-minute quarters or something. But, you know, Alabama looked really impressive defensively there. You know, we're just easing into this now. You're going to have the Big Ten coming back. And I think you're going to have a whole handful of upsets here. I think that's going to be the norm. Yeah, Paulie.
Missouri looked like Clemson compared to Florida State. Florida State, Miami, that was a no-show by FSU. Miami, I watched a lot of that. Almost for the experience of it, Miami was truckloads better than Florida State. They are a mess down there.
I was shocked at how bad Florida State is. Now, I love Derek King. Now, he was big time at Houston, transferred there. Miami is good because they got a great quarterback there. He's certainly a great college quarterback.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Best and worst of the weekend, Reg. What was the best thing you saw? What was the worst thing you saw?
It's been interesting because I wanted to see how the celebrations would be in the conference finals. Being in an environment like that, usually we're used to when a team clinches, usually it's on their home floor in front of their home fans, fans going crazy, you know, players crying, you know, all that stuff. But I got to give credit to the NBA. They had the confetti shooters out. They tried to make it as real as possible. Little thing I was surprised about, they didn't allow the family members on the court with the players. They're
still being pretty stickler, even though they're in the bubble with them. They're still keeping them somewhat separated. So for what they had to work with, that was probably the best thing I saw, is because I wanted to see how those celebrations would be. The worst thing for me, my Angels are not going to be part of the baseball playoffs. That's the worst thing for me, Theodore. Mike Trout, for the sixth straight year, the best player in baseball, will not be a part of the postseason. That's the worst thing for me.
He's been in the league 10 years, and he's only played in 3 playoff games.
Amazing. Amazing that the best player, how many MVPs does he have now? 3, 4, something like that?
I think 3, and he's finished runner-up or in the top 3 a couple of times as well.
It's mind-boggling that we have not witnessed him on the biggest stage against the best pitching and the best teams a chance to perform. So I keep my fingers crossed every year. Yeah. Next year will be Mike Trout. You're winning it all next year. My Angels. Go Angels.
All right. If LeBron wins, does that change anything in the big picture of how he's viewed in history?
No. I think his legacy has been set for a while. One thing I am hoping, if the Lakers were to win and LeBron is finals MVP, that's something no one in the history of the game has done. Be able to win 3 championships with 3 different organizations and be finals MVP on those teams. So not Larry Bird, not Kareem, obviously not Michael, not Magic, none of the other greats have been able to achieve that, to lead 3 different teams to 3 different championships and win the finals MVP. That would be kind of cool to see, which would kind of separate him from a little bit, but I think his legacy is already set, Theodore.
He can't get any higher than what he is in Europe. Is he the second greatest player of all time?
I'm going to go with MJ 1, and I'm going to go with Kareem and LeBron mixed in that next level in terms of everything that they've contributed to the game. I put Kobe somewhat in there as well. I say I'm not always looking at championships.
Okay.
I'm looking at impact.
Okay.
Impact on the game. So that's why I have MJ number 1. And again, LeBron too, he's in the social media age too, something those other guys didn't have to deal with. That's why LeBron's numbers and his stature is so much bigger, is because he's in the dawn of Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and so forth.
How do the Lakers not win this?
It's theirs to lose. It really is. They will always have the 2 best players on the floor in this series. They're well coached. They have championship experience. Obviously, LeBron James, this is his 10th NBA Finals. Don't forget about Danny Green and Rajon Rondo. Both of those guys have won championships. So to me, it's theirs to lose. Having said all that, something is special is going on in Miami. And people ask, who do I have? If I have to make a pick, and this is coming from the heart, this is a lot like when the Lakers played the Detroit Pistons, I believe in early 2000, when no one really gave the Detroit Pistons any chance. I knew Detroit was going to win that series because during that series with us in Detroit, I was begging our guys, Jermaine and Ron and Al Harrington, I was like, do you guys understand? Whoever wins this series between us and the Pistons is going to win the championship. I was like, I wasn't even thinking about Kobe and the Lakers, because I knew at that time defense won championship. Detroit was such a together team, and I see a lot of that in the Miami Heat. So I'm picking Miami in 7. The Lakers should win. They're going to be very top heavy to win, odds on favorite to win. But it's just something special all season long, and especially since the restart, that Miami and that culture of Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra, I'm picking the Heat in 7, but I expect the Lakers to win. Is that fair enough to say?
Yeah. I mean, you just pick both teams, but I...
No. Miami in 7, but the Lakers should win, but Miami in 7.
Okay. But, you know, you said that this doesn't change LeBron's legacy if he wins. If he loses, does it do anything to that?
No, because I think people expected he's going to be a top five player no matter what. He is, numbers alone. And we got to think about this. He's been in the NBA 17 years, 17 seasons, and he's been to the finals 10 times. That's amazing. I mean, that is amazing in today's age with a lot more parity. I mean, this is not the 60s Celtics, right, where there was, what, 8-12 teams back then? There's 30 teams now. There's better parity. It's an amazing feat. So if he loses, no, it doesn't change anything. He still is going to be in the top three, in my opinion.
The third best player on the Lakers is who? Or third most important player?
Who's ever making shots at the current time. I think in that last series versus Denver, it was probably Rondo and his impact off the bench, along with KCP. I thought KCP was fantastic, not only guarding Murray, which he did a great job, but he was making shots. Who should it be? It should be Kuzma, and he's kind of been up and down. I thought Caruso played great. The role players have started to come around and fill the roles a little bit, but they're facing a different team in Miami, because if they allow – did you see how many wide open shots that Denver missed between – Jeremy Grant, Gary Harris, Torrey Craig. You give those looks to Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, Jay Crowder, it's a different story. So their defense has to be much better versus Miami than it was versus Denver.
And I said this earlier, and some people pushed back on this, but I still believe it. I think Miami is a better all-around team. I think they can go maybe 8 or 9 deep, and you can get contributions. You can sometimes get a career night out of somebody, as we've seen with them. You know, the Lakers got the two great players, but, you know, Bam is a force to be reckoned with. Jimmy Butler is great at the end of games. Hero, Duncan Robinson can shoot. Goran Dragic can be a, you know, very difficult matchup there. Jay Crowder is a tough guy to have. Spoelstra's been there before. It's a really interesting roster that Pat Riley has built here.
And here's the thing, too. Jimmy Butler has had success going against LeBron James when he was in the Eastern Conference, whether he was with Chicago and understanding when he was with Miami. That dynamic, they've locked horns a lot of times. So he's familiar with playing against LeBron. And they do have a number of people that they can throw at LeBron, because that's what you have to do. So you're going to put Jay Crowder on him as well. I think Bam Adebayo will get a lot of time guarding LeBron James too. My only concern with the Heat will be their length and their depth, because you've got JaVale McGee, who didn't play a lot last series, Dwight Howard, and Anthony Davis. I mean, that's, you know, almost 21 feet of length right there. There's not a lot of bigs on Miami. Rebounding will be paramount, but Tyler Hero rebounds great for his position. So gang rebounding will be key, and second chance points. But Miami plays fantastic nose-to-nose defense. I think this is going to be a great series. These are the two best teams that have played the best since the restart. It's no surprise, and people's like, there's no Milwaukee. There's no Toronto, the 1-2 seeds. No, the two best teams playing the best basketball are in the NBA Finals, and we should appreciate that.
Turner Sports Analyst, Hall of Famer Reggie Miller joining us on the program. I was looking at, I'm keeping an eye on Mike D'Antoni, where he's going to end up. I think New Orleans would make more sense, but now there's talk that maybe the 76ers, and if he goes to Philadelphia, would he trade Joel Embiid and try to get James Harden from the Rockets there?
That's an interesting trade. I can see that. But if you trade away arguably the best center in the game, and he kind of fits into D'Antoni's style, because he is a big that can shoot threes. I know he's more effective with his back to the basket, but he can face you up and knock down a three. My question is, why would you trade him and maybe not Ben Simmons, who really wouldn't fit into a Mike D'Antoni system, because he's not a three-point shooter? So I don't know how he would fit into a D'Antoni system more so than what Joel Embiid.
Well, what could you?
I agree with you. New Orleans seems more like his style. They can get up and run and shoot a bunch of threes. I don't know about Philadelphia.
But what you can get more for Embiid, I'm guessing.
I think he can get a lot for Ben Simmons, too.
Yeah, but how does he fit in today's game? I know that he's a good defender. He's a matchup nightmare. But it's, I don't know, like him and Lonzo Ball, like these guys who play point but can't shoot. Like, what's the value there in today's NBA?
Are you talking about Ben Simmons and Lonzo?
Just you could put out Ben. And, you know, we know about Lonzo, and you know his shot is his shot. I don't know if Ben's going to get better either. But how valuable is Ben Simmons in today's NBA?
Well, he's a guy that at 6'10" can push the ball and puts a lot of pressure in the open court. The problem is, come playoff time, and this is why Houston has always had so much problem during the regular season. It's a track meet. You don't prepare for them the same way. You get into a series where you're seeing a team 5, 6, 7 times potentially, you take away most of their strengths. And most of those strengths for Houston was in the open court. And it's very difficult for them to play half-court basketball because you're taking away those things. And that would be the problem wherever D'Antoni went. If he's going to do the 7 seconds or less and just jack up a bunch of threes, what is your plan come playoff basketball? That's what I would be asking Mike D'Antoni.
Yeah, and I don't know if he's going to change his coaching philosophy. I mean, he's, what, upper 60s? He's almost 70 years. I don't think he's changing anything. And is he the right coach for Zion Williamson?
He could be. Look, here's the thing with Mike D'Antoni. He's going to have options. And you could throw Indiana in there as well because they would love to have Mike D'Antoni as well. So he's going to have his pick on where he wants to go. To me, it's all about personnel. I personally think New Orleans would probably fit a little bit better because they have more weapons for him to work with offensively.
Yeah. How about all the Kentucky alum in the finals?
And balling too, right? Jamal Murray, Tyler Hero, Bam Adebayo. I mean,
well, Frank Vogel went to Kentucky. Pat Riley went to Kentucky.
Yeah.
So it's alumni night there. Did Kentucky recruit you?
No, I wasn't on their radar. No, I was lucky to get into UCLA again. We've had this conversation before. They wanted the other Reggies before this Reggie. They wanted Reggie Williams and Reggie Lewis, and they opted to go somewhere else. And I was the last Reggie on their radar, and I was lucky to get in.
Wait, where else were you going if you didn't go to UCLA?
I had it down to two. I had it down to Cal State Fullerton, and I had it down to Arizona State. Those were my two teams. I know, right? And then UCLA came in last minute, and every kid here from the Southland wants to play for UCLA. And when they came in the last minute, I was like, Fullerton, Arizona State, who are you guys? What? This is UCLA recruiting me. Huh? What? Bye-bye.
And they pay a whole lot better.
Hey, Sam Gilbert was gone when I came in. He was gone.
What did your sister, what kind of offers did Cheryl get? Now, Cheryl's the number one player in high school and probably could have played for some men's teams as well. She was that talented, in my opinion, right?
Yes.
What were they paying or offering under the table for Cheryl to go to a women's program?
They were not paying, but let's just say she was going to be able to drive around campus in style wherever she went. Not that USC, that other school did that. But
what kind of car did Cheryl drive at USC?
My mind is foggy. I can't remember, Theodore.
Your Zoom connection. Yeah, your Zoom connection.
All I know is she used to pick me up when I was a freshman and she was a sophomore, and I rise back to Riverside. We're in style.
But when you went to her games in high school, what was that like?
They were events. They were events. They weren't games because in Riverside, when Cheryl played in high school, people came from everywhere. They put the men's game our games like as the JV games. That's how big they were. They had to move them to bigger arenas because her team and Cheryl, they were like phenomenal. They came from like Riverside and the Palm Springs area and the Big Bear area. People would just flood our gymnasium just to watch her, just to watch her warm up. It was an event. It wasn't a game. It was an event.
I like how you guys were the men's varsity basketball team.
And we were good. We were like ranked number one or two, and we were the JV game. Like our game started at 6, and her game started at 8.
One of my favorite stories is when Reg had an unbelievable game. I don't know. You had like 38 in a game, I think, or
something. Like 45.
Okay.
And here I am. I'm going to finally top my sister. I had 45 on the road, you know, coming back, gloating. Yeah, sis. Yeah, what did you do? Oh, nothing. I just had a cool 105. I'm like, Dad. He's just laughing, shaking his head. I'm like, I know y'all playing, right? Like, you guys scored 105 as a team. No, son. She had 105. They, as a team, had 179. First of all, how is that possible in a high school game with 8-minute quarters and no shot clock? No shot clock.
And we have the clip of when Cheryl interviewed Kobe about 10 years ago when she dropped a passion bucket. It sounded like this.
Most unusual but superb game for Kobe Bryant. 17 points, 11 assists, 5 rebounds, and he is with Cheryl Murray.
Now, Kobe, if you guys could only bottle tonight's effort and intensity, how much fun would the remainder of this season be?
It'll be a lot of fun. You know, we're playing with a full passion bucket tonight. It really came out playing with a lot of energy, a lot of hustle.
Kobe had heard it on the show, Passion Bucket, and then all of a sudden he threw that in there when he's interviewed by Cheryl.
Let me just say this, and this is why Cheryl was great for so many years on television, especially at our network at Turner, because the players absolutely knew, I mean, this is the greatest women's basketball player of all time, and they respected her so much. She was almost like one of the guys, so they could joke around, and she knew the vernacular because she had been in those wars with them, really created those wars. So they respected Cheryl so much. It was almost like they were talking to one of their teammates, and you kind of got a sense of that from Kobe Bean right there.
Great to talk to you again, as always. We'll be checking in with you. And once again, Reg, with his heart, is picking the Miami Heat to win in 7. Thank you, Reg. All right, buddy.
Appreciate it, Theodore.
See you, buddy. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.